it looks to be a tough presidential election this year, the incumbent facing criticism over the economy, trade imbalances, huge deficits caused by war, and in the end, Democrat Grover Cleveland takes the White House over with overwhelming popular vote. Oh, maybe you thought I was talking about 2012 and not 1892. I admit there are many similarities between the two election seasons, mostly in the color and age of the people voting, though. Columnist Timothy Egan takes on this topic in his recent op-ed for our partner, The New York Times. He writes this: "When you look at the numbers, it's stunning how little this Republican primary electorate resembles the rest of the United States. They are much closer to the population of 1890 than 2012. There's no way to put this without resorting to demographic bluntness. The small fraction of Americans who are trying to pick the Republican nominee are old, white, uniformly Christian, and unrepresentative of the nation at large." We're ready to fact-check that claim, Timothy Egan of The New York Times. And with us this morning, of course, we have our old friend, Kenneth C. Davis, author of Don't Know Much About History and the whole series of books. Hello, sir.
I wish it was longtime friend rather than
long
old
time.
Friend.
Well, of course I meant longtime friend.
the agony.
But let's first fact-check that particular claim by Timothy Egan. Is he correct that the people voting, the small fraction of people voting in these Republican primaries and caucuses, are closer to the diversity of 1890 than of today?
I think that the main point is absolutely correct, and that's a function of the primary system in America as it's grown over the years. New Hampshire and Iowa are small, cold, and white. They're the snowflakes of America, but they are given undue attention because they come first, and that's partly a reflection of the media situation, that they're first and they're not representative, but because they are first and because they're the only ones at that time, they get an undue amount of attention. The other factor is here that primaries have always tilted toward the most highly motivated voters rather than being a picture of the electorate. So back in 1972, the Democrats were pulling their hair out because George McGovern was doing very well, and he was doing very well by having young, motivated anti-war supporters driving his numbers at the polls. So there's always been a pendulum swing of in the primaries of very, very radical to one side or the other, as opposed to being a perfect statistical sample of what America looks like.
Do our general elections look like the rest of America?
Much more so, because more people tend to vote, especially in presidential elections. But even in presidential elections, we usually get, you know, at best 50 plus, maybe 60% turnout. The election of Barack Obama, of course, was unusual in some respects because there was such a huge turnout of younger voters.
And brown voters as well.
And brown voters. And so that's something that will be interesting to look at this year coming up. Are those same people going to vote? But you go back and look at, I think what Tim Egan is saying is very, very accurate in the sense that this is a picture of America that did exist then, with a few exceptions. First of all, we have to point out that women didn't vote at all in 1890.
And there was no primary system. Right?
There was no primary system. And you had to be 21 and a property owner still in most places, although that was changing. And he says Christian, but I would clarify it a little bit more, that the electorate then was much more Protestant. And as this Republican primary electorate has been, this is a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant, even though Rick Santorum is running on a very Catholic tilted ideas. Don't forget, it took 1960 to elect a Catholic in America. This is still a period in which Catholics were resented and disliked in America, although not as much as they were in the earlier part of the 19th century. One of the real interesting parts here, I think, is actually looking in a way historically how many of the issues, as you were saying in your opening, are the same.
Yeah.
I mean, we are still fighting the same battles in some ways. And the whole primary system really came out of the populist movement, which was really born at this time. The populists then, they started around 1892, really formed as a counteraction to the two main parties at that time. The Republicans were
Ironic, though, that I mean, I don't mean to interrupt you. We're speaking with Kenneth C. Davis, author of the Don't Know Much About History series. It's ironic that they came out of the populist system because, as Timothy Egan points out in his column for the New York Times, his op-ed for the New York Times, what they've now become is a very elite group of people who are choosing nominees.
Well, and this is a complete reaction to the way they chose nominees up until the time primaries came into existence, which is really the early 20th century. For most of our history, candidates were chosen in caucus, meaning in the congressional caucus, by party leaders. And especially at the late 19th century, the party nominees were really being chosen by bosses. This was the height of the boss system and the so-called smoke-filled room. This was the late 19th century. So populism really said we need to have more of a people's voice in choosing the presidential candidates. And so primaries and more direct elections came out of that movement. The suffrage movement is just starting off really in force in 1890.
And we're talking about women's issues again.
Women's issues. But, I mean, labor was a big – was the burning issue of the day.
Yeah.
And this was the labor wars period. So you had – and both of the main parties were pretty much opposed to labor.
And we're talking about that again.
Tariffs and taxes.
Free trade.
The banks.
Yeah, coming out of the Civil War, our debt and our deficit because of our expenditures during the war.
The gold standard. Ron Paul is, you know, talking about the gold standard.
He probably could have won in 1890.
This was the huge issue of its day. And when you talk about gold standard, you're really talking about – but the populist movement, it's so fascinating to look at it because it really took pieces of what is now Occupy Wall Street and pieces of the Tea Party and kind of – merged the two of them together, you know, more than 100 years ago. My favorite line from the time, Mary Leese, an organizer, said, "What you farmers need to do is raise less corn and more hell," because this was seen as really the farmers versus the big city moneyed interests.
No, you can't swear on the broadcast air there, Kenneth C. Davis. He's the author of the Don't Know Much About History series, pretty much saying that a political pundit today could dress in old-timey clothes and still talk about politics in 1892. Thanks.
Thank you.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.